you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler, best-selling author, actor, and lead singer of Fozzy. Now he's rocking the podcast world.
Yay!
This is Talk Is Jericho. Talk Is Jericho, starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk Is Jericho, the pot of thunder and rock and roll. The spell you're under will be broken by Chris Jericho. And guess what? It's Friday.
It's Friday.
The People's Podcast has arrived. Let's go for a ride. Unter Glieben, Glauten, Globen. All right. I got something to say, but I'm battling down out now. Yeah! It's a bit of a burnout out now. Now I'm gonna fade away! Oh yeah! Gonna start a fire! Rise up, gather round, rock this place to the ground. Burn it up, let's go for broke. Rock the night, go up in smoke. Rock on, rock on. Gonna pyromania, gonna celebrate, gonna fabricate. It's just a pyromania, come on. Burn out, what do you want? Burn out, what do you want? I want Jericho, you got it. Burn out. Woo! There's a new one for you that actually worked out pretty good. I just did that off the skin of my teeth, off the skin of my bottom. Reason why I did a Def Leppard song? Yeah, because Def Leppard guitar player Phil Collin is coming up. They've teamed with Kiss this summer for a monstrous magical mystery tour. Kicks off June 23rd. It's a serious double bill, man. Both bands are doing full sets with full production, and Kiss will be closing the show every night with the pyro and special effects that only Kiss can give you. People! Oh, yeah! And come on, we know that makeup would melt right off their faces if they had to play in sunlight. No way Kiss plays in the daytime. Come on, man. Kiss are the kings of the nighttime world, not kings of the twilight world. Def Leppard, they're going to rock it too. It's going to be a great show and a great interview with Phil Collin talking about all things Def Leppard. I'm still stoked about my cowbell performance there. But before we get to Phil, I just want to give you guys another big thank you for checking out my sponsors. You can find them all in one place. Just go to podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com. And click on the Keep Our Podcasts Free banner at the top of the page. That'll take you to Talk Is Jericho and links you to all my sponsors, including Amazon. All the Amazon links are there as well. UK, Amazon Canada, Amazon USA. So again, please go to podcastone.com, click on the Keep Our Podcasts Free banner at the top of the page, then click on Talk Is Jericho and find all my great sponsors and check them out. Yes, Phil Collin coming up. I'm actually, before we get to Phil, I'm going to tell you some tales. I'm here in my hotel room in London, in Trafalgar Square. Just finished the first London Is Jericho spoken word Q&A performance, and it couldn't have gone better. It was such a blast. Had so much fun. The place was sold out, jam-packed, beautiful theater in Leicester Square. And, you know, I didn't really even have a set list. I start out with a story about my jacket from WrestleMania 28, and then I kind of just go from there. Told some great stories about Vince McMahon, about how I got suspended for kicking the flag in Brazil, and how the whole thing of me becoming the undisputed champion came about, how I ate cold pizza locked out of my hotel room the first night as champ. Yeah, no hookers and blow for me, kids. Cold pizza and locked out of a room in the Hampton Inn. told some great tales about Ozzy Osbourne and Mike Tyson and Sharon Osbourne and Zakk Wylde, and some rock and roll tales about Fozzy, and just a really really cool night. And actually, my set list that I had written down, I think I did three stories from it, and just kind of made the rest up. Did some cowbell songs. A lot of people there were Talk Is Jericho fans. Got to hear the cowbell. What songs I did is between us and them. So it was just an amazing time. Had a blast doing another show in London at Leicester Square on Sunday night. So if you missed out on the show on Thursday, don't be a loser. Don't be a putz. Get off your ass and jam, man, and get over to Leicester Square. You can go to psievents.co.uk to find out all the details. There's still a few tickets left for Sunday. If you want to come check it out, do it, man. Saturday also, Download Main Stage. Really excited about making our Main Stage Download debut. It's a beautiful day here, actually, in London. The sun is shining, which is a first in London for me around this time of year. There's a lot of rain going on. I remember a couple years at Download, the rain... It rained so bad on Friday that some bands got canceled. Europe was one of them. We got canceled at Download. But not this year. It's sunny. It's going to be a great day on Saturday as we rock the main stage. We're playing early at noon, so get there early. But most of you will be there anyways because people just go and camp for the whole weekend. And it's amazing. I remember telling you about the last time we played Download. It was at 12 noon on the second stage, and there was about 25,000 people there. So I'm expecting it to be double that at the main stage at noon on Saturday. So it's exciting. I'm really stoked to be here. And I'll be presenting at the Metal Hammer Awards on Monday. So a whole bunch of cool things going on. Had a crazy trip over here too. I was sitting in Tampa and all ready to go on my flight. Had a nice seat picked out and had a booky book. And I was going to have a couple of drinky winkies. And the flight from Atlanta was delayed, so it landed an hour late in Tampa. Then the weather moved to Tampa, so we were delayed in Tampa again. Then we flew back to Atlanta, landed like an hour and a half hours after I was supposed to. My flight was leaving at 10:55 to Heathrow, and we landed at 10:16 and then sat on the runway for almost 25 minutes. I finally got off the plane at 10:40 and then went from B29 in the Atlanta airport all the way to F2. So it's basically from one side of the airport to another. And I was running super fast, and I just bought new shoes, and my ankles were all blistered. And then I get to the F gates, and there's like this big, long corridor. And at the end of it, you can see F2, and there's a guy behind the desk, and I'm running as fast as I can. I'm waving like, hey, wait for me, wait for me. And the guy must have seen me coming 5 minutes before I got there. And I get to the front, I'm like, okay, I'm ready. And they're like, oh, sorry, the plane's gone. I'm like, what? So yeah, we closed the door. And I was like, what are you talking about? You knew I was coming. Like, you knew that as soon as I landed, they're like, okay, we're going to call ahead and tell them wait. She goes, yeah, but we can't wait for one person. It's not worth waiting. And I said, what? Yeah, well, it's not worth waiting for one person. And I was like, what are you talking about? He said, well, if there was 25 of you, then it's worth waiting, but not for one. So I was really angry about that. I was like, you got to be kidding me. You're telling me that I'm not worthy of waiting for. He's like, no, the plane has to leave on time. And I was like, but the plane left an hour and a half late from Tampa. And of course, at this point, I'm yelling at the guy and I throw my boarding pass at him. Then he's yelling at me for throwing stuff at him. And then it just becomes a pissing contest. And meanwhile, it doesn't change the fact that I arrived at the gate at 10:53. The plane had been pushed back to 11, got there 7 minutes early, and they still didn't wait for me. And I wasn't the only one. There was like four or five other people. And some people were crying, and it was just bad. So I was like, I'm going to get, what's your name? I want your badge number, and I'm going to call your supervisor, and I'm going to get to the bottom of this, and I'm a diamond member, and I'm a 2 million miler, and blah, 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 blah. I never said, do you know who I am? I've never said that once in my life, nor will I. If I ever do say, do you know who I am, shoot me. And so finally, it's like, you know, I called the Delta and I asked to speak to the supervisor and I explained the story. And they go, well, really sorry, sir. And I'm like, that's not going to cut it. I want restitution. I'm thinking, she's like, well, what do you want? I'm thinking, I want, you know, first class tickets for the whole year, and I want diamond status forever, and I want a foot massage, and I want free luggage, and I want a cake. And like, how about 5,000 miles, frequent flyer miles, and a $200 voucher? I'm like, okay. So that was it. And I had to wait in Atlanta for 20 hours because the next flight didn't leave the next evening, 6:30. So I arrived in London this morning at 7:30 a.m. Super tired. Got to the hotel after I got through customs, through the traffic at about 11. Slept for a couple hours and went right to London Is Jericho and killed it, man. Knocked it out of the park. So it just goes to show you don't need sleep. You just need energy and some coffee and a little bit of gumption. I got some gumption. So, you know, then I had to come and do these intros and ad reads and all the stuff that I love to do for Talk is Jericho. And I also get an email from somebody that says there was like a huge roster cut in the WWE today. And it's been a long time since they had this Black Friday sort of thing where a lot of people were cut all at once. Let's go through the list. JTG, actually a business partner of mine. We're in a business together. And, you know, I'm not surprised that Jay got cut. It's been a long time since he's even been on TV, since he even did travel to any of the shows. So kind of a drag, but not a surprise. And I think Jay's kind of set himself up with this other business that hopefully works huge, because if he gets rich off it, so do I. Oksana, I thought they gave her more of a push than she ever deserved. She never really picked it up. And it didn't really have that look that they're looking for in the WWE, especially after she dyed her hair black. So, you know, I saw her breaking up with Alicia Fox this week, and that was kind of the end of the line for her. Evan Bourne, very surprised. Don't even know if he's healthy, but great worker. Vince had me work a program with him a couple years ago, and I said, I'll do this program only if you're going to do something with him. And he said, of course we're going to do something with him, and of course they never did. But he's a great performer, a great wrestler, really enjoyed working with him. He'd be a huge pickup for TNA or Ring of Honor or the Global Wrestling Force Federation that Jeff Jarrett is starting. He'd be at the top of my list. Camacho, nice guy, son of King Haku, King Tonga, Ming. Great, great friend of mine. Camacho, nice guy and big guy. Never really got a chance to do too much. Brodus Clay, very strange. The Funkasaurus gone and the Funkadactyls survived. I never would have guessed that, but I guess they kind of gave up on him and the Funkasaurus thing. And nice guy. So we'll see what happens with him. Mark Harris, don't even really remember who that is. Kurt Hawkins, another guy like JTG, hasn't been used in so long. Doesn't surprise me that he's gone. Teddy Long, same thing, hasn't been used in a while. Great guy, good performer, can do it all. I'm actually surprised that he maybe didn't try and find something behind the scenes for Teddy. He's that type of guy, nice guy that could have done, I don't know, be a timekeeper or, you know, be the guy who collects money on the road shows, that sort of thing. But I guess they felt elsewise, otherwise. Jinder Mahal, basically 3MB, was a comedy act. And Jinder never really had a lot of personality, I guess. Which is too bad, though, because he did have something, but it just never worked out for him. Drew McIntyre, that's a big surprise for me. I think that Drew could have been a lot bigger than he was. I think he got sidetracked when he got married to Taryn. I don't think that worked out too well for him politically. And once again, once you're in 3MB, it's kind of the end of the line. It's funny that Heath Slater, out of all the guys, is the one that stayed. But if I was TNA or Ring of Honor or Global Wrestling Force, I would pick up Drew McIntyre as well. He'd be another guy that would be on my instant list along with Evan Bourne, because I think Drew has a lot to offer, and he's unique. He's got the Scottish accent. Put him in a suit and make him serious. You know, all you would have to do is have him come out and beat up guys for like a month, and you would forget right away about the whole 3MB thing. Gimmicks like that don't damage your career, but they definitely hurt it, and he needed to get out of it, and they needed a fresh start. So I'm a big believer in Drew, and I think that he can do a lot more, and so hopefully he'll get a chance. Yoshitatsu, another guy who's been kind of on the fringe for ages. I actually worked with Yoshi in Tokyo, and we tore the house down, and we had one match afterwards in the States, and I was like, listen, man, enough of this like acting nice, humble Japanese thing. I want to see a killer out there like I saw in Tokyo, and if you don't give it to me, I'm gonna take it. So he worked this match, and he's been very timid, you know, kind of polite, almost like intimidated because I was Chris Jericho or whatever it was. Don't you know who I am? And he, I just said, screw this. I took my elbow pad off and I dropped a knee right in the middle of his face. I think I broke his nose. He started bleeding, and then he just started going crazy. It's funny because when someone gets bloody in the WWE now, they make you take a break. And I had to sit there while they stitched him up. And I grabbed a chair and I sat in the middle of the ring. And as he got stitched up, he was just staring at me. And finally, when we were ready to continue the match, he came and beat the living hell out of me. And I was like, yes, that's exactly what I want. It was like Reg Dunlop and Slapshot when he causes the guy to beat him up and he's just kind of smiling. Like, yeah, that's exactly what I was looking for. So Yoshitatsu, maybe he can go back to Japan and work there. But once again, hadn't really been doing much in the WWE, and his time had kind of come and gone. So no real surprises on this list, the exception of Evan and Drew. But like I said, both those guys have a long way that they can go to contribute to the business. And I think I called him Drew McIntyre. If I ever called him Drew McDonald, that's because there's a guy in England called Drew McDonald that I work with. But good luck to everybody that got let go, and don't give up. Keep following your dreams. And if you really believe in yourself, you know you can make it. So once again, anybody that got released, it's always a drag. But it's not the end of the world as you know it. You can still come back and be a star. Yeah. Yeah, boy.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Talk is Jericho.
On the line right now, my good friend and one of the sexiest men in rock, Phil Collin from Def Leppard, is here. How you doing, man?
Hey, great, Chris. How you doing?
Good. I was laughing. I was waiting for you to call, and you said you were watching old Mike Tyson fights.
Yeah. I was trying to connect, and for some reason it was busy signal and all sorts. But I was laughing though.
Are you a big boxing fan? I know you do a lot of kickboxing on the road. Do you like watching boxing all the time?
I do, and I love Mike Tyson. You know, I just thought he was just the best. You know, so I just love watching them old fights. It's great.
He was such a beast back in those days. You know, I don't think at his peak, you often hear, you know, would it be Ali versus Tyson? But I think Tyson would have even beaten Ali maybe back in his prime.
I do. I really think that. I think, you know, everyone says he's just an animal and that. He wasn't. He was just, it's such perfect technique, you know, hitting with his whole body, you know, just like winding up, you know, shoulders going back and just, you know, there's one that was on, he was like fighting Tony Tucker, who's about 12 feet tall.
Yeah.
And Tyson, you know, he's doing a jumping hook and everything. It's just perfect. It's amazing technique. Great.
We did a thing a couple of years ago where Tyson came on Raw with the WWE, and he and I were in a tag team, and I was warming up with him before, and he was had the little boxing pads on, and he was hitting me, you know, doing the warm up so hard, Phil, my shoulder felt like it was going to popped out. And this is a Mike Tyson at 45 years old, he was really overweight at the time before he lost that weight, but he was still such powerful punching. I was like, this guy would have killed anybody when he was 20 years old.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know? Amazing.
But it's good. It's good to talk to you, Phil. It's been a while.
Absolutely.
So much good stuff going on. June 23rd, big tour starts. Kiss and Def Leppard going out on the road. Have you ever played with Kiss before? Back in the old days, maybe?
I have. You know, my old band Girl, we actually opened up for them on their last tour with the makeup on. So that was like 1980 or something.
Right.
And just, you know, I bumped into them over the years, known Paul and Gene and stuff. And, you know, they're great. They've always been really cool. So I think this would be fun.
Well, I mean, every summer you guys go out and you always have such an amazing package you put together. But usually you guys are on top, the headliners. Now it's a co-headlining tour, but Kiss is closing the show. Is that intimidating to know that you have all of this makeup and pyro that you got to put up with? Are you going to have to – do you pick up your show or you guys just do what you do?
No. We without sounding arrogant, you know, I think we're the best live rock band out there. You know, I think you know we do our own vocals. We play our asses off and stuff. And so I'm so proud of that. So I never get intimidated. In fact, it does the opposite. It's like, you know, even when there's people on the side of the stage, you know, like if Jimmy Page was on the side of the stage once, it actually makes me play better.
Wow. Yeah.
You can go one way or the other. I know a lot of guys that they go, well, and they kind of, you know, hide and sheepishly kind of hide into them. So I do the complete opposite.
It's almost like a trial by fire. I mean, when you got, like you said, Jimmy Page on the side of the stage, it's like, all right, kid, let's see what you got.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you ham it up, you play on your knees and all. I mean, it's great. Yeah, it's all that stuff. It's killer.
Well, it's interesting too. I was just thinking about how things used to be, even when you guys were starting or through the years when you played, that, you know, it would be like, when Kiss went on tour, they would always kind of take a lesser-known band. You know what I mean? Like, they discovered, you know, I guess, you know, Cheap Trick or Ted Nugent or, you know, all these great bands. Now it seems like it's more about the big package tours. Do you think that that's a little bit harder for younger bands to get that experience of playing in front of so many people? Because there's so many, like, two giant legendary bands playing together, and there's really not a lot of space for another band underneath that. It's kind of the way that it's going right now.
It is, but then there's other ways. I mean, there's kind of Coachella type bands, and right. they go and they do all these festivals and stuff like that. And I think because it's changed so much the industry, there's a little bit of a survival mode as well. I think, you know, there's less and less. I mean, there's less and less promoters. There's less and less of everything. So you kind of have to circle wagons a little bit. So there's definitely a case for survival, and it's just a bit tougher for newer bands, newer artists, because, you know, really in this day and age, you know, no one really cares that much unless it's some big pop band.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that's the problem. So, I do think there's a bit of survival mode there. And plus, you know, the fans, it's kind of like a no-brainer for the fans. They get to see a great show. There's like no...
Yeah.
You know, it's a guarantee. It's not like, well, I don't know this support band, and, you know, am I going to take a chance on this? Whereas they go, okay, yeah, this is tried and tested, so I'll absolutely go for that.
It's like every single song that you're going to be hearing when Kiss and Def Leppard play is a hit, basically, you know?
Yeah, hopefully, yeah.
Were you a Kiss fan in the 70s?
I missed it because I'm from England, so it was so different, you know, and it was, you know, I'd seen the photos, I'd seen the albums and that, and like I said, we opened up for them in 1980, but I was into American bands, but it was different stuff, and plus, obviously, all the, you know, the Zeppelins, the Purples,
yes.
the Queen, and all, the Who, Stones, and all that stuff, you know, we had all the homegrown stuff.
Who were your favorite bands back in those days?
The first band that I ever saw was Deep Purple, and that really made me play guitar. So Ritchie Blackmore smashing this strap and just playing that off, and that done it for me. That actually kind of made me go and pester my mum and dad for a guitar, which took 2 years. But yeah, no, that's the thing that done it. And David Bowie, T-Rex, you know, just everything that came out of England, really.
It was such a great scene at the time with so many classic bands, like you mentioned. Were you a big Queen fan as well?
Huge Queen fan, yeah. I think, you know, we modeled Def Leppard on a cross between Queen and AC/DC. That was kind of like the blueprint, you know. We said, if we're somewhere in between that, then we're kind of doing something cool.
You can see that, too, especially with the vocals. Like, there's so many layered, stacked harmony vocal parts. I mean, that's definitely a Queen influence there, right?
Yeah, for sure, without a doubt.
You know, I wanted to ask you about Queen. I just happened to watch it the other day for a couple minutes. Was the Freddie Mercury tribute when he passed away in Wembley Stadium in 92. Def Leppard had a huge prominent role in that show. What do you remember about that show? How cool was that?
It was great. I mean, there was all these other, there was so many, you know, bands on. And me and Joe Elliott got to sneak on stage and sing with David Bowie, Ian Hunter, and the remaining members of Queen, and Mick Ronson on guitar.
So yeah,
that was a real highlight. I've got to say, we've done all the young dudes, and we were just singing, but it was just doing backing vocals. So it was just very cool to be on stage with, you know, with Bowie there and everything.
It was amazing, just the how big that show was too at Wembley Stadium, with like 80,000 people and all the bands. I mean, besides Def Leppard, and you know, there was Guns N' Roses and Metallica and George Michael, and even like Liza Minnelli and Elton John. Like, you'll never see something like that again. You know,
I know, absolutely, yeah.
So monumental. I was laughing when we were talking. You talking about the press conference that you guys had with Kiss when you announced the tour, and they asked Paul Stanley his favorite Def Leppard song. He said "Photograph," but he said he could never figure out how to play it.
Right. <yeah. laughs> I know. Yeah. No, yeah. We struggle with that. We got it down now, but
30 years later.
When it first came out, yeah, we really struggled with it because it's there's so many harmonies and stuff, and Love Bites was another one. You know, we'd recorded all this stuff on the album, and we'd never played it live, and it went to number one in the Billboard charts, and we'd never played it as a band. You know, it was all done separately, and we had to take 2 days off during a tour and just play that song over and over again to try and like get the vocals and the guitar parts together. You know,
you're talking about Love Bites.
Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned Photograph too, Ed. That song was already written when you got into the band, right? Was the Pyromania record almost done by the time you joined?
It was, and the great thing about that, I just, Mutt said, just play some solos over it. Just play guitar over it. And then he heard me sing and said, well, you should sing some backing vocals, and then more and more. But I had all the fun parts. You know, all the songs were written, all the real hard graft and donkey work was done. I just come in and like, played solos and fired and just done... Just all the stuff on the top, which is all the real fun stuff, you know.
So was that riff we're talking about, Photograph, being such a difficult riff, was that written by Steve Clark?
Yeah, it was. And you know, it's a two-guitar part. A lot of people can't play it because they can't figure out. There's actually two guitars, and it sounds like one.
Oh.
So it's a little trick there. So that's what really kind of confuses people.
Wow. Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So Steve was a major songwriter in Def Leppard.
Absolutely. And the great thing about Steve, he would come up with very unique stuff. I'd never met a guitar player that didn't do all the standard stuff. Like, he'd come along and he'd play something that you'd never heard before. Really unique, you know, stuff that was kind of completely out of the blue. You go, wow, where'd you get that? And he'd, you know, he'd get Led Zeppelin riffs and turn them backwards and do harmony chords and that. So he was amazing, very, you know, insightful and kind of and open and kind of not just kind of linear. He would kind of go, you know, deep and
dimensional.
Very cool.
Do you find that he's kind of underrated as far as, you know, his place in history, like as a songwriter, as a guitar player?
I do, but you know, I also I think Brian May is as well, and I think Steve and Brian May. I think if you become the ultimate team player, sometimes you get ignored a little bit as far as that stuff goes. Another one that's always surprising: Jimmy Page is the most amazing arranger, producer, and I think people got confused. They said, "Oh, he's this great guitar player," which he is, but it was more the stuff he was doing. Like, it was so unique and different and you know, and not just the same old. And I think both Steve and Brian may fall into that category.
It's interesting that you say that, because you mentioned AC/DC earlier, and AC/DC is a perfect example of people underrating them as players, because they don't do fancy riffs and a lot of fills and all that sort of thing. But as a machine, you mentioned team player, and that's the secret of being a great band. Like, for example, AC/DC, that is the best machine as far as every guy doing exactly what's right for the tune and just making it so powerful.
Absolutely. I mean, you wouldn't want to go, as a band, you wouldn't want to go on after AC/DC's just gone off, you know, because it's like got that, you know what I mean?
Whereas
some bands, you know, you got some great player or someone singing and doing all this crazy stuff, but as a team, you know, the overall thing, when people are just sitting in a room or an arena listening to that, you can't really follow that, because it's got such a drive, it's such a force, you know.
Yeah.
It's like a tornado. It's crazy.
I felt that too when Vivian Campbell joined Def Leppard. And, you know, he was known for Dio and his crazy blistering solos, but in Def Leppard he plays exactly what he's supposed to play. There's no fancy flashy parts. When you first started playing with Vivian, was it a natural chemistry right off the bat? Did you have auditions to replace Steve, or did you know Vivian right away was
the
guy?
No, we didn't have auditions per se, but we saw about five different guys that we actually invited down that we thought were really cool, and it was more to do with the personality. Someone that had to be able to sing as well. That was the other thing, and be part of a machine, like exactly like you're saying. You know, anyone can do that. I know like a million guitar players who can just, you know, wipe the floor with everyone guitar playing wise, and then you go, okay, well, I want you to sing, and then I want you to, then I also want you to play within this song structure with this band, and they can't do it. So that was the main thing that we really wanted, and plus a personality, you know. Initially, when Steve died, I actually didn't really want to be in the band anymore.
Really?
Was like, yeah, he was my best friend, and you know, it just sucked. It was like, it wasn't like the gang thing anymore. You know, my buddy had gone, but also, you know, part of the team. It was like, So, you know, Joe had to talk me off the ledge, basically. You know, he said, well, you know, we wrote these songs with Steve, so, you know, it's the least we could do to honor him. And that's really what we did.
Was there a gap in songwriting, too, when Steve left? Or did you have to pick up the slack as a songwriter?
Just different. I think with a band or an artist per se, you're always constantly evolving. So that wasn't, you know, I do miss his songwriting and the riffs and everything that he come up with. But everyone was coming into their own anyway. You know,
right?
Joe and Sav, you know, would be writing very different types of songs. So that didn't happen so much, because we're all on this discovery journey, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
So that was the cool thing.
You guys are now working on a new record. You have been for a few months now, doing it in Ireland, actually, of all places. How is that coming along, and how is it being back in the studio? I mean, it's been a while.
It has. Actually, this was really weird because we said, oh, perhaps we'll get a song or an EP or something for next year. And we went over to Joe's house in Dublin and got 11 songs started, which is, it blew me away because we're notoriously slow.
Yeah, right.
We don't really get that thing together. So it was just really good. Everyone was very open-minded about different ideas and everything. And there was so many different ideas flying around that it was just a... It was just very exciting. So I go back in May, I think. I go May the 15th, I think. We kick off again and do some more writing. And in the meantime, I'm doing another album, like a blues album. Well, it's not really, but it's like extreme blues, or we're calling it alternative roots because it's really over the top. It started off being bluesy, but when we started recording electric, it ended up sounding more like Led Zeppelin. So. And that's me. It's Debbie Blackwell Cook, who's my wife Helen's godmother.
Okay.
She's this black woman, 60-year-old, just sings her ass off. It's kind of like a cross between Chaka Khan and Tina Turner. It's that really powerful voice.
Soulful voice.
And Robert DeLeo, who plays bass with Stone Temple Pilots, playing bass. He's on it. He's killing it. We're actually recording with him at the moment, and it's amazing. And Forrest Robinson, I met him. He was playing with NDRE and then played on a lot of this kind of almost hip hop kind of R&B stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then he played drums for the Crusaders, which is jazz, you know.
Yeah.
But really, he's ultimate rock drummer. You know, he actually sounds like someone spliced in between John Bonham and Billy Cobham, if you can imagine that. It's like just crazy playing. So just the four of us have managed to get this monstrous sound. And CJ Vanston, who's a writing partner I've been writing with for years, he plays keyboard. He's doing one of the songs as well. And so it's I'm loving it.
What's the project called?
Delta Deep.
Delta Deep. So what led you to go? What led you to go down that road, down the blues path?
Well, me and Debbie were sitting around, like, playing acoustic. So she sang at our wedding, and she's always singing. You know, she's been singing gospel and everything since she was four. And we'd done a charity event down at the Gerson Institute in San Diego, and we'd done a few blues songs. And everyone was going, oh, my God, where can we buy this music? And we said, there's nothing. You know, we're just doing a few blues songs here and there, a few Motown songs. And they said, well, let us know. And so we started writing songs, and then it became electric. And before you know it, it's got this kind of sound. It sounds like an entity. I can't really describe it. But as soon as we got some stuff, I'll send you some, because it's just it's killer.
Well, it must be fun, too. I mean, that's one thing that's great about being a musician, is playing with other musicians. And obviously, you played with Def Leppard for years, and it must be kind of cool to get out there with some new guys and get some new, you know, techniques and some new ways of thinking as far as putting together songs and playing them.
It really is. It's always an adventure, and it's an education. You know, it never stops being that. And I'm so pleased that, you know, none of us allow the ego to ever, you know, you see a lot of artists and that, and they can't do that. They can't grow like that because, you know, there's a ego block that stops them. So it's just wonderful. It's just, I don't know, it's just very inspiring to just be doing different stuff, you know.
Do you change your technique at all, or use any additional tricks or things that you don't use in Def Leppard when you're playing with Delta Deep doing blues?
It's way more aggressive. I play way more aggressive in this, and it's... It singing aggressive in it, and just the whole thing. So yeah, there's a big difference. I mean, it's still obviously me playing guitar, but it's it's a very different approach. You play just way open and kind of loud almost.
Now that's interesting. That goes against kind of the perception. You're talking about rock and roll, being in a rock and roll band, a hard rock band at that, and being in a blues band. But you're playing more aggressively with the blues band. How do you mean by that?
I think, you know, not knocking a lot of the blues stuff that's around these days, but it's very tired and the same old thing. And I think what we're doing with this, it's just very aggressive. I've never heard blues like this. It's it's just it almost sounds like Rage Against the Machine does Muddy Waters. You know? It's kind of crazy, if you can imagine that.
Rage Against the Waters.
Absolutely.
Now, also, too, you also have kind of a punk project, Man Rays, which we talked about a few years ago as well. That gives you a different outlet as well to play something a little bit different.
It totally does. You know, Paul Cook from the Sex Pistols on drums, and Simon Lafferty was in Wild Man Girl. And that's great. We actually, on the Delta Deep album, they're playing one of the tracks. It's this actually Man Ray with Debbie singing on it, and you know, that's really cool as
well.
So we yeah.
Now, are you singing lead in Man Ray's?
In Man Ray's, I am. Yeah, but on Delta Deep, a lot of the stuff we do duets, but most of the time Debbie's singing this stuff, and I just do the backing vocals.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, and that's one thing that you know, backing vocals, you mentioned earlier about Def Leppard, about singing all your vocals. I mean, you have five singers on stage, and there's some very intricate parts. How did you, obviously you've been playing these songs for so long, but do you guys do like just vocal rehearsals and get together and warm up together as far as knowing your parts? Or how did you guys get it so locked in vocally on stage? Because that's not the easiest thing to do.
No, I think all credit has to go to Mutt Langer, who really taught us how to sing, you know, and he made us sing certain ways when we was doing the records, you know. So I really honestly learned to play guitar properly through him and sing, you know. He'd get you to sing with a groove and, you know, kind of get the melody right and everything. And so really when we start rehearsing, you know, even after the Pyromania tour, before Hysteria, we get into that kind of frame of mind that he would actually, that he got started for us. And we still do it to this day, actually. So we actually owe him a lot for everything, you know.
Well, I've heard the stories. I mean, I just read a book about AC/DC that was talking about their experiences with Mutt on Highway to Hell and Back in Black and For Those About to Rock. I mean, you worked with Mutt for three records, too. Obviously, your two biggest records of all time were with Mutt Lange. What is it about this guy that he has such a magic touch to make you guys, you know, turn into a completely different band?
I've never worked with anyone in any occupation or anything I've ever done that works that hard as Mutt, and he has no ego. It's amazing, you know, especially someone that intelligent and that kind of talented,
right,
to just be that open and kind of, it's great, and it's actually a pleasure. It's so inspiring to be sitting around with someone, you know, in a room, and he's coming up with these ideas. I mean, I've actually played on a thing with him last year, and he was making me play this guitar stuff, and I was like, I couldn't do it. I'm like, where on earth are you getting this from? He makes it up on the spot. It's just amazing. So, he's so solid, and it's just a pleasure to be around him. You learn so much, you know. It's a And it's not intimidating. It's not for me, because I think it's, you know, it's like I said, it's a learning process, and you're just so inspired, and you're picking all this stuff up that you haven't heard before. So it's wonderful. Like I said, he has no ego, and the way he deals with people and everything, it's very diplomatic, and just, yeah, it's just great. So, I know some bands don't have that same experience, but, you know, I've always had just an amazing experience working with him.
Did you ever think about maybe working with him again when you did this new record?
Yeah, I think the problem we always have is because we, like I said, we traditionally take so long. I don't think, you know, he doesn't really have the time anymore. He does so much other stuff. I don't think we could fit it in. I mean, unless we've done like a song, you know, which I don't know, you know. But we're actually on a bit of a roll, you know, with Def Leppard with the songwriting already. So I'm looking forward to going back in May. So it's cool.
When are you hoping to put that out, the new Def Leppard record?
I think it'll probably be next year, because you know, like I said, but it, you know, it's not actually going to be an EP or a single song. It's actually going to be a real album. So that's exciting in itself.
It is exciting. You know what I love about it, too, is it would be easy for you guys to just sit in the, not in a rut, but I mean, you go tour every summer, like we spoke about. People know what songs they want to hear, but it's great to do new music as a musician, because playing the same songs every night, it probably does get a little bit tedious.
Yeah, more so it's a kind of a weird one, this, because a lot of the fans go, we want to hear new music. Then you play a live show, and they say, but we just want to hear all the old stuff.
That's right.
So you have to walk this kind of delicate line. You know, I think the Stones do it very well. They you know, Doom and Gloom was their single at the last tour. And it was great. It was such a great song.
It was a cool song. I agree. Yeah.
And then they went out there, and they're doing Jumping Jack Flash, and they put new life into the old songs, which I thought was cool. You know, Mick Taylor coming out.
Yeah. That was awesome.
I think you have to do all of this stuff. It was, you know, it was really cool to see them. So, I think you have to, you know, learn something from those. They're masters at it, you know. So it's,
yeah. I thought it was really a really smart idea, and I'm not sure if it was calculated or not. The last time I saw you guys, which I believe was two summers ago, you guys opened. You had a new song that was on your live record. I think it was it called Unbreakable or Unstoppable or
Undefeated.
Undefeated. Yeah. I knew it was on something. But you opened with the new tune, which was smart, I thought, because everybody's ready to see Def Leppard, and you start playing this new song, and you're getting a great reaction just because it's the beginning of the set. And you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
They have to hear the new tune because you're just starting the set.
Oh, that's a nice little trick, that.
It was very smart.
Yeah, especially, you know, because it's part of a theatrical piece. You know, if you actually, you know, treat it as theater, you know, you come on, you actually do that. And you've got your new single out of the way. So it actually takes on, it's more powerful than it actually would do if someone just heard it. You know,
I thought it was a very smart move. And I remember telling my wife, I was like, these guys did the right thing. That was really cool. It was really smart.
Yeah.
We're talking to Phil Collin of Def Leppard. They're going on tour with Kiss on June 23rd. We're going to check in with our sponsors and more Phil Collin on the way.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Talk is Jericho.
Here with Phil Collin of Def Leppard talking about all the cool stories about Hysteria and Mutt Lange. You guys just did your Las Vegas residency. Viva Hysteria was the name of the set where you played Hysteria in its entirety. How was that?
That was great. Me and Joe have been wanting to do that for 20 years. I did Cheap Trick, done whole albums before, you know, back in the day in the theater, and that's where we got the idea. And we wanted to do that, and we just, all of a sudden, we just got this offer. They Hard Rock said, you know, will you guys do a residency? And we said, yeah. They said, but would you play Hysteria? And we're like, yes, great, fantastic, finally.
So when you guys are rehearsing, I mean, there's some songs like, you know, Don't Shoot Shotgun or Run Riot. I mean, you probably have never played those live. Did you have to go back and try and relearn the songs?
Yeah, they were really hard as well. Vivian had never played them. I think, you know, and just singing some of the parts while you're playing some of the guitar parts was actually the hardest part. You know, we'd actually try and divide them up so it would make it easier. If someone's singing a certain thing that's easier, then they play a harder guitar part, and vice versa. So, yeah, you had to sit around and get all of that. And we wanted to make it as close as we could. You know, there's, you know, on the record, like some of the songs have like, you know, 8 or 10 guitar parts going off at the same time. So you just choose the most prominent ones, and then the most prominent vocal, and kind of go with that. But it's so much fun, actually, just digging into that and actually relearning all that stuff. It was actually a blast.
Which song was the hardest out of the ones that you had to relearn?
It was those two. It was Don't Shoot Shotgun and Run Riot. Because you have to, you know, scream. Like, the singing's almost like, you know, give yourself a hernia. It's like balls to the wall kind of screaming while you're playing this kind of precise guitar riff. And you know, it's really easy to mess up when you're doing both. Mm-hmm. You know, being extreme about both kind of things. So, yeah, it was great. Like I said, you know, it was a cool thing to do. And hopefully we're going to do it again. We've got an offer, but we're not sure when we'll be able to do it yet.
Well, I mean, it's such a classic record. I mean, back in those days, 25 years ago, you could actually have 7 singles from a record, which is what Hysteria had. So there's hits all the way through. So even people that might not know, like, the deep cuts, it's still kind of sprinkled with hits throughout. So did the whole album go over huge with your fans that showed up to see it?
It did, and you know, we broke it into 2 sections. We actually was our own opening act, and we called ourselves Dead Flat Bird. Yeah. with a curtain behind us, and we done all crazy stuff like Wasted, you know, Good Morning Freedom, B-sides, and stuff off High and Dry and Adrenalizer, all different, you know, deep cuts and everything. Then we went off, came back 20 minutes later, and the screen opened up, and then we had a big production and played the Hysteria album. It actually felt different. It actually felt like we were 2 different bands, which was very weird, I've got to say.
Did you guys wear, different clothes for Dead Flat Birds?
Yeah. Yeah, we've kind of In disguise. Well, not in disguise, but yeah, different personalities, yeah.
And it's funny, you finally gave the hardcore fans, like, you know, the Eddie Trunks of the world, what they've been asking for years, for you guys to play all those old tunes from the first couple records.
Completely. Eddie loved it. You know, it's like, yeah, Good Morning Freedom, yeah, it was like, why don't you ever play that? You know, why don't you ever play this one? It's like, well, Eddie, this is definitely for you. He loved it.
Did people know? Did they know that they were going to see you guys open as the Dead Flappers, or was it like just a surprise?
No, it was a surprise. And what was really scary, and this is the God's honest truth, there were people in the audience going, these guys suck, and I can't believe they're a real crap Def Leppard cover band. And it's like, but the drummer's got one arm, you know, it's obviously really us. But there was people out there actually thought it was other guys.
This cover band is so good, they actually even found a one-arm drummer as well.
Absolutely.
Right. Like, what do they think? I mean, it's obvious that it's you playing guitar, right? It's not like you said, you weren't wearing disguises.
Well, I was wearing a shirt, so, you know, that was kind of disguise, yeah.
They didn't recognize you, man. That's right. I was going to ask. And you had to borrow that shirt because you don't own any shirts.
Right, absolutely. I had to borrow that. And Joe had a hat on. It was like, yeah, very different look.
where did you get the name Dead Flatbirds?
When my son Rory was born in New York, and he was born in 1990, his mum was going to these, like, you know, Lamar's classes and all that stuff. And one of the other mothers there said, so your husband plays in a band, and what's the name of it? And she said, Def Leppard. Dead Flat Bird. She thought that's what she had said. So we had some T-shirts made up, and it just said Dead Flat Bird. So we kind of just, you know, resurrected that.
You know, I'm sure it was the same when you guys first started. I mean, I know you joined the band a couple years later, but even when before the band became famous, to say the name Def Leppard, I mean, you know, my band is Fozzy, and to say that, you know, most, you know, some people still are like, Fozzy, what's that? It must have been the same with Def Leppard before you guys became just part of the cultural fabric. Like, what does a Def Leppard even mean, you know?
That's a very good point. I have no idea, but I think, you know, because it came about, Joe was doing a project for, like, a school project, and they're to make a poster for an imaginary band, and he made this thing, probably a spoof on Led Zeppelin, because it kind of, you know, kind of sounds like that.
Spelt it wrong too.
Yeah, and then when they formed the band, you already had a poster, and that was it, really.
Listen, we already have a poster. We don't have to worry about that. Let's just use this name.
Absolutely. Why not? Yeah.
You know, you mentioned before about we made a joke about you not wearing a shirt. I mean, obviously, it's kind of one of your trademarks. And why not? I mean, you look great. You're in amazing shape, and you have been for years. How is your training regimen when you're on the road, especially when you're getting ready to go out for a couple months? Is there special things you have to take with you, and how do you kind of stay in that type of shape?
Yeah, I think consistency is the thing, and as you know, diet and everything. So,
yeah.
This is really weird. I had a weird accident last year. I had to have an operation on my tendon slipped off my knuckle. I was actually getting in a boxing ring.
Really?
And I just pushed my hand down to get balance, and it just went, it slurped and kind of popped off.
Oh.
So I had to have it stitched back, and I actually got up to doing. I was actually bench pressing 380 pounds in Vegas.
Wow.
And I'm 155, so that's crazy.
That's like ant strength. You're like an ant lifting double your weight.
I know. So now, since all this, I'm actually really struggling to do 120.
Let me also remind you that you're a guitar player, Phil. I mean, how did that affect your guitar playing? Never mind your weightlifting.
Well, I had to wear a cast for 6 weeks, and I actually couldn't play. I took the cast off, and my wrist was flopping all over the place. And I actually learned to play slide guitar because I couldn't hold a guitar for a little while. And then now you wouldn't even know. I've got this great physical therapist, Scott Moncrief, who's down here in Laguna. And he's been putting me through all this stuff. And I had this amazing surgeon, John, in Paris, actually.
Yeah, okay.
Thing back on. So I was in really good hands, and that worked a treat. And I just have to be a bit careful with it. So at the moment, I'm actually just getting into the two workouts a day, like one body part in the morning. I'll just do weights.
And yeah.
Obviously, nowhere near like what I was doing before. And then in the afternoon, I'll just kick pads. I can't really hit with my left hand too much mm-hmm. at the moment, and I have to really take it easy. Or anything else, you know, a rowing or a spin bike, any bit of cardio. And then, you know, you split it up and you eat right. At a certain point, they kind of meet in the middle, and you go, oh, okay, I'm ready to go.
So what do you do when you're on tour? Do you take some weights with you?
Yeah, absolutely. I've like a bench press and bands as well. I think it's mm-hmm. pretty cool, you know, just doing push-ups and bands. You can just get a killer workout with that. And, you know, the last few tours, actually, I had John Carrillo, who was a Muay Thai kickboxing coach and world champion coach, and he was out. So I was actually doing all the pads and stuff all the time, which was really cool.
Yeah.
But this time I'm coming back kind of a bit more gradually, so it's a little lighter.
Yeah.
I'm going to probably weigh a little less this time. Instead of being 155, I'm trying to get down to like 148 or something.
Well, I mean, I remember when I came and saw you guys backstage, you had the big kickboxing, you know, apparatus set up. And plus, you were a really big juicer as well. You actually got me into juicing. I stopped because it's so hard to clean the damn juicer when you're done. It was driving me nuts.
isn't that funny? That's the one thing that puts you off doing it. Because
I know
sometimes. In fact, it's sitting in my sink right now. Actually, I've got to clean it out, and it's all caked with stuff. So yeah,
yeah. I mean, it's like if someone would just make it for me. If there was a Jamba Juice by my house or in my kitchen, I would have juice like three times a day. But I'm far too lazy to clean the thing out. Now tell us, I remember the recipe you gave me is, I don't know if it's still the same, but tell my listeners the Phil Collin super duper special juice ingredients. What's the mix?
Well, I think that there's one that, you know, the basic one is like the carrot, and it has to be organic, you know, fruits and veggies, organic carrots, apples, ginger, and a bit of lemon, and that always tastes good. But, you know, kale is really good. We always throw kale in there as well.
All right, yeah.
And on tour, you know, it's whatever's kind of left around, we just throw them.
Yeah, we had on our rider when I was going through my juice phase of the ginger, and when I stopped doing it, we would always have ginger. To this day, like somebody didn't change the rider, it's like we don't need ginger anymore. No one's eating this. Like,
right, absolutely.
It's such a weird looking thing too, like this stupid thing of ginger thrown on the table.
It is. It looks kind of, it looks pornographic or something. It's weird.
Yeah, exactly, man. Exactly. Now, this is a serious question. I always wanted to ask you this. You know, when you're playing, the stage lights are hot. I mean, you've got a you know, 15, 20-pound guitar around your shoulders. When you're not wearing a shirt, does the strap chafe? Does it leave a rash? Does it hurt? Is it tight?
No, I think I think I sweat so much, it just slides all over the place. So I've never really had that. I think if it was dry, you probably would.
Right.
But I've never had that problem. So, yeah.
Yeah, most people have a shirt that they wear to kind of pad that. But now, we talked about the Vegas residency. I was going to ask you, I mean, how cool is that? I mean, you go there for, what is it, like a month or something like that?
Yeah.
And you play three times a week or four times a week, or what's the schedule?
I think it's like four, yeah.
And then the rest of the time you just hang out at the Hard Rock and just enjoy yourself.
Yeah.
Man.
But you know what? It wasn't like that. We ended up being so busy. I thought we were, I mean, I did get to catch a few shows, but I thought we'd have so much more time off, and we didn't really. It was kind of a lot harder than I thought it'd be.
Well, why is that?
I think you, we was also filming a documentary and doing, you know, doing the Viva Hysteria. They were filming that. So there was, you know, interviews. And the other thing is, you know, family members come out. Everyone has like a ton of family members coming out. And it was actually quite exhausting.
That's hard.
You know, every single night, you know, everyone would like kind of converge. So I wouldn't get to bed till kind of late every night, way later than I am when I'm on tour. So, because you're hanging out afterwards and you're meeting people.
You got to be sociable and take care of all your guests. But I mean, it seems like it's kind of Hard Rock's becoming famous for that. Guns N' Roses did it. I think a couple other bands, Motley Crue has done it. Is it something that you would do again?
Absolutely. I mean, I may moan about it, but it was great. I mean, I loved it. You know, we all did, actually.
Oh,
yeah. Very cool. It was just great going into your same dressing room every night, you know.
It sure beats the old days of going into a van and driving 12 hours down the queue.
Right.
Right? Down the M1.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Hey, I was in Vegas a couple months ago, and I went and saw the Rock of Ages play, which is, you know, it's a blast. I noticed in the movie Def Leppard tunes were in it, but on the show, Def Leppard tunes aren't in it. What's the reason for that?
When they first pitched the idea, they said, well, can we include that? And there was some, it was some business thing. It was like, I don't know what it was. Our management at the time said, well, you know, does anyone get paid for this? And they said, well, no, but, you know, all these other bands are doing it. And they said, well, you know, call us when you're ready to do that. So that's really why that came about. I actually thought that would have been rectified by now because of, you know, after we'd done the movie and everything.
Right.
They would have done that. So, but yeah, it's a shame. But, you know, we'd have actually been up for playing on it as well. So, but, you know, there you go.
Yeah. Did you watch the, did you check out the movie?
Yeah.
What'd you think, Tom Cruise as a singer? He did a pretty good job.
I you know, considering he'd never sung before, he'd actually, 5 months he actually spent in vocal training and everything.
Wow.
And he'd never actually sung, so it was a brand new thing for him. And we met him, and he was, he said he was really nervous about just doing it in front of us and stuff. So then it's pretty cool. So, you know,
yeah,
hats off to anyone who can do that.
Well, and it's become such an iconic. I mean, the play is great, and it's cool that it's named after you. But you're talking. I wanted to ask you one last question about the new record. How will you be releasing it? Because you guys are kind of going out on your own. You know, and what are you going to do when the record's ready to go?
I think there's lots of different ways you can do it. You know, like everything kind of merged into like one company or two corporations, like even record labels or promoters or anything, you know, like, you know, computer company, everything kind of merges into one another. So there's basically two options. You can either go with one of these major labels if they make a really good deal, or you can just go out on your own and actually just release it yourself through an independent, you know, a licensing and distribution and everything, and then just do your own promo. Mm-hmm. And that's a bit more difficult because there's lots of different ways you can do that. But yeah, so they're the two options, really. So we haven't even got there yet because, you know, the songs are not finished yet.
Right.
Some of them are quite along the way, so it's great, and, you know, it's going to be next year, so we've got a lot of time to actually think about that.
But you guys still aren't up on iTunes yet, are
right.
you? What is your reasoning for that?
Well, that was a brilliant masterstroke by Q-Prime, our old management. They put a clause in our record contract that said that if there's a new medium that comes out, you know, it was record, vinyl, cassette, then CD.
That
they couldn't release it without our permission, which was amazing considering, you know, what happened with like Eminem and stuff like that and everyone else. You know, they would get they'd really get taken by the label. If they would actually put nothing into it, iTunes would do all the work and the label just would get all of this profit, you know, like maybe 70-80%, and the artist who done all the work would still get their kind of measly 15% or something. So by doing that, you know, it allowed us to not let them exploit us in that way. So, you know, and again, you know, we're up for talking with them. If they're up for, you know, changing the structure, we're totally cool with that, and then it'll be up on iTunes. But until that happens, you know, we're not going to do it.
So you're kind of at odds with them right now then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just waiting, really. I mean, there's nothing kind of, you know, malicious or weird or anything. It's just waiting for the right time, you know.
It's business. You're right. You're right.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, I think that Def Leppard could be one of the last really big bands that is not up on iTunes. You know, I think the Beatles were one of the few holdouts. Zeppelin, Sabbath, I think, isn't up yet. But and then there's you guys. So you're kind of the last of the Mohicans.
Yeah, it's weird,
It is. It is very weird. And how is Vivian doing? He had some cancer issues. Is he doing good? Is he able to play and everything's cool?
He's doing good at the moment. He had a back problem as well, so he's getting that sorted out, and he's got to get the whole cancer thing checked again before we embark on the tour, make sure everything's cool there. So we've got a little while, yeah, but he wants to get it done, you know, checked out before we kind of get moving, you know.
Now, do you have other like somebody else that could fill in for him if he has to miss a gig or two, or do you plan that far ahead, or would you just cancel the show?
I mean, we probably could, you know, if it came down to that. But you know, Viv, you know, as the last tour, you know, we wasn't even sure whether he'd be able to make it. You know, when we done Viva Hysteria, he really struggled with it, but he actually got through it. So we're just going to go ahead like that and deal with anything, you know, any replacement or something, you know, if it happened.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the best way to look at it, you know. He's like you said, we talked about earlier, but the chemistry that you have as a band, it's hard to just throw somebody else in there, especially when, I mean, you guys, look what you guys did with Rick Allen. You waited 2 or 3 years until he was ready to play with you again.
Yeah, definitely.
So when you go out and play live this summer, what's still one of your favorite song to play on guitar-wise?
I always like playing Rocket as a song because it kind of, you know, sums the band up, I think. You know, it's kind of got all the ingredients. But I don't know, because we both us and Kiss, there's so much production on this tour, mm-hmm. and so much theatrics going off that I think that the show will have to be a little bit shorter for each band. You know, you have to get our stuff off, get their stuff on,
right,
get it all into place and everything. So I think everyone's going to be doing pretty much their best songs, their mm-hmm. most popular songs. I think that's the thing. So we probably won't be doing any deep cuts. We'd probably wait to Vegas for that. But it'll just be like an extravaganza.
How do you guys even decide a set list at this point in time? You've got so many hits and so many songs that people love to hear.
I think the obvious ones that you say, well, we can't not do this. I mean, we have to do Pour Some Sugar and we have to do Photograph.
Yeah.
Fall In and even Let's Get Rocked and stuff like that, and there's a list of them, and then before you know it, you've kind of run out of space already. So you're doing all this stuff anyway.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, that's a good position to be in. It's a good problem to have.
It is, yeah.
So many hits, Kiss and Def Leppard, June 23rd, the tour starts. You can find all the dates online. And check out Man Ray's new EP called I Surrender. Very, very cool stuff. I actually bought it. My cousin bought it on vinyl, actually. So we were checking
it
out. Yeah. So many cool things. Phil, it's great to talk to you, man. And hopefully I'll get a chance to run into you this summer and we can make some, we can juice together.
Absolutely. And one other thing I've got to say, actually, when you were on The Talking Dead, you were the best guest, the most intelligent kind of, you had the best answers. I've seen, you know, I've watched that show. I'm such a Walking Dead geek.
Yeah.
you were absolutely bang on. Profound stuff you were saying, and it was like just right on. I was like, wow, about time. You know, they got someone who's really smart, can answer all the questions. It was like, you're the best guest, hands down.
You know what's funny is I you text me after that, and I was like, wow, that's pretty cool.
That's right,
like, you never knew who's watching. But I was fortunate because I was on the week after Marilyn Manson was on, who they have like said was the worst guest ever. So, but I mean, the thing about that show is there's so many, when you watch it, and you don't realize it till the end, but there's so many little hints and kind of allegory of what's happening and how it relates to the overall theme of the show. You know what I mean? So I just really clocked into that and said, like, okay, this is happening because that's going to happen later. You know what I mean? And it's, I think that's why it went over so well. Like, did you watch the season finale this year?
Absolutely, yeah.
Do you remember? I thought it was a great cliffhanger, and I don't read the comics, so you know, I don't care about what's going on. I just like I think that those people are cannibals, you know, and they're
absolutely. Well, did you see when they actually ran past? Did you see the carcass?
Yes, I did. But here's what I was going to point out. Did you? And you might have picked this up on your own, but at the halfway through, Rick is teaching Carl how to catch a rabbit, and he shows he says it's like a funnel. You build the little dirt trap like a funnel, and it leads the rabbit right into the trap.
Right.
Guess what happened at the end of the show when they were.
Wow.
Remember the snipers were shooting at them, and I remember people going, "Well, those guys were bad shots." No, they weren't trying to kill them. They were slowly funneling them into the trap. Right.
You've got me lost. Actually, you're absolutely right. But that's it. You say that's why you were the best guest on there.
Thanks, man. Like I said, everything on that show means something. So
totally, that's great. Yeah, they're definitely cannibals.
Yeah, I agree. They're cannibals, yeah. And now we have to see. You know, the thing about that show is somebody's going to get it. Like, you don't know who's.
I know.
It's not like they're all going to escape. Someone's going to bite it. You know.
Yeah.
Phil, we can discuss this further this summer. I'm looking forward to seeing you. And thanks so much for doing this today, man. I'll let you go back to watching old Mike Tyson whip some ass.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Talk to you soon, Phil.
Always great. Cheers.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Talk is Jericho.
Thanks to Phil Collin for the amazing interview. I can't wait to see Def Leppard and Kiss this summer. And thanks to all of you for listening. I know there's hundreds of thousands of podcasts to schwoz from, and you continue to schwoz mine, and I thank you for that. And I appreciate you using my Amazon link every time you do your online shopping. Really easy to find. Just go to podcastone.com, click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page, then click on Talk is Jericho, and you see all three of my Amazon links. Amazon Canada, Amazon UK, and everybody's going Amazon! Amazon USA! Every time you do it, Amazon kicks back a little cash to the show so we can keep doing this for you for free for twice a week. That's the way I like it, and I know you like it too. No extra fees or hidden charges. You're getting your shopping done, and you're helping me out in the process. Listen, new Fozzy record, Do You Want to Start a War? Comes out July 22nd, and now Lights Go Out, even higher on the charts, up to number 47. One Crazed Anarchist, also doing great. You can see the lyric video for both of those songs if you go to YouTube. As a matter of fact, I'm going to play One Crazed Anarchist for you right now. And if you like it, please go to podcastone.com, click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page, click on Talk is Jericho, go to Amazon and pre-order Do You Want to Start a War? If you do that, let us know on the Twitter at Fozzy Rock, and I will follow you, we will follow you, and might even DM you as well. So, ending the show, One Crazed Anarchist, new Fozzy, right here on TIJ.
One crazed anarchist. white craze and our curse.
Dig it? If so, let me know on the Twitter at Talk is Jericho, at Fozzy Rock, at I Am Jericho. Also, Tweet Secret, go download the app and you can check out all the videos that I post. I'm insane on this thing. I post multiple videos a day that go directly to your device, exclusively to you. Nobody else sees these amazing documentations of my life, 90-minute videos. Like I said, I think I sent 4 out today. Don't miss out. Go check out the Tweet Secret app and see what is going on. And thank you once again for being here with me. I'll see you next week. You know I love you. Stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. In the meantime and in between time, that's it. Another episode of Talk is Jericho. See you next week, and a big yeah, boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Okay, keep your eyes closed.
Okay.
I want to show you my first ever painting.
All right.
Okay. Open your eyes.
Oh, that's a lot of colors and shapes.
So be honest. What do you think?
Well, I like how if you switch to Geico, you could save hundreds of dollars on car insurance.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Here, why don't I hold your paintbrush while you call them?
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Daddy, where do babies come from?
Honey?
Mommy went to the store.
Oh, well, you see, there's a mommy and a daddy, right?
Right.
And see, when they call Geico, they could save a bunch of money on car insurance.
Oh, really? And that makes them happy?
Yes, that makes them very happy.
That's good.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we could have this talk, Sunshine.
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Syria Peace Talks? I'm Ben Thomas with an AP News Minute. Syrian rebels have rejected peace talks being proposed by Russia. They're accusing Moscow of failing to pressure its ally, President Bashar Assad, to end the conflict. Christmas may be over, but the shopping isn't. Hazel Ginn was at Macy's Herald Square in New York today.
It's not too bad. Even we went up to the 9th floor, and we managed to get in a queue about 4 deep, so not bad. Yeah, and then we went to another one, and it was only a couple, so we kind of timed it well, I think.
America's research group, which focuses on consumer behavior, projects holiday sales up about 5% this year. Harley-Davidson is placing a renewed emphasis on teaching people to ride as part of its efforts to attract more customers. The company is expanding the number of dealerships with a Harley Riding Academy. The move comes as the industry grapples with years of declining sales and an aging customer base. I'm Ben Thomas.